Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life.
Hi everyone, this is Jenny. You know, technology is everywhere today, even in places where there may be a shortage of food and water. Often you'll find a ubiquitous mobile device. It seems like we can't do without technology today. And it's commonly held, even by us Christians, that technology is neutral. It's just something we use. Is that truly the case? Here to discuss this subject with me is my good friend, Aaron Lee, a lawyer, poet, and many more things. But I particularly asked him to come. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Jenny.
Because of what he's doing right now in his work. But maybe we'll be talking about that more later. So first off, that comment that technology is neutral. What is a good biblical response to that, Aaron?
Well, you put me on the spot there a little bit, Jenny. I don't know whether there's a good biblical response to that.
Okay.
You know, technology is not often referenced in the Bible. Well, I've heard, you know, you've probably heard the joke about how Moses was the first person to download something from the cloud on
his tablets.
Yeah, so I mean, jokes aside, something that does come to my mind when I hear that phrase, you know, technology is neutral, is what often people say about other things in the context of maybe even guns. You know, I've heard people say things like, "Oh, guns don't kill people.
People do.
People kill people." You know, and therefore, sort of saying that the gun, which is a piece of technology, by the way, sort of makes things is neutral. It's morally neutral until the person or the agent picks it up and then decides what to do with it. But I think that's a bit of a limited way of looking at it. We sometimes fail to recognize that the gun, for example, is a thing that was engineered and created exclusively for the purpose of killing another living creature. So it does sort of call into question, you know, about the things that we make, to what end we purpose to use them. And technology is such a big term, right?
Yes, it is.
I suppose we could start by just asking ourselves, how do you define technology? I'd just say that it is something, it's a product of human ingenuity that makes something possible that was previously impossible.
So, I mean, in everyday life, even the rice cooker is a piece of tech.
Yes, a book is a technology, you know, at different points in time as a human civilization went on, societies, people applied their minds, their creativity, engineering prowess to make life easier, more productive, you know. And that's one of the wonderful things about the human being, that God endowed each and every one of us
with that creative spark,
you know. And technology is really an artifact that we come up with that sort of has a wonderful potential to shape culture, to shape and make our lives easier, and also to do things that are a lot more negative and insidious, like enslave us to addictions, to entertain us into mindless zombies and things like that. I'm sure we'll talk about all that through of the day.
No, but precisely because of this this range, right? Okay, technology is helping us and all that, that we sometimes tend to think that it's therefore neutral, it's how we use it. But you did raise up a very good point that certain forms of technology lend themselves to moral issues. For example, guns or the atomic bomb. I mean, as we know the story, the creator of the atomic bomb was quite clueless about its potential as a scientist, and until it dawned on him, and then it was too late, you know, to stop the progress of how they chose to develop the science he came up with and then eventually use it to annihilate hundreds of thousands of people for generations. So, but I still want to push that question, though. I think as Christians, we are sometimes lulled into thinking that if something is there that helps us to do something better, we should therefore just use it. Yes. That's really at the heart of what technology is, right? Yes. It aids us, makes things possible, makes things easier. Yeah. And we are honestly, we are really quite addicted to ease and comfort as human beings.
Yes.
So that's where I guess I'm coming from. With that in mind, then technology is not always, you know, so I just want us to cast a more critical eye on it. Would you like to share your thoughts?
I would even add that, you know, there are perhaps two, maybe more ways to look at this whole question about the morality, if there's such a thing, of technology or technological innovations. One is, of course, from the viewpoint of the consumer, the person who receives this technology and uses it for a purpose that he or she knows that it was designed for, you know. So Netflix and, you know, and so on, sort of engineered and pushed out to the market to entertain us, maybe to educate us with documentaries and make us think deeply about the world, things like that. Then the other viewpoint would be that the maker of the technology, you know, what was the ultimate objective? Or some people use the word, the Greek word telos, behind the engineering of it and giving it to the world, you know.
Yeah.
And often we don't critique both enough. You know, so just to take one particular point, I mean, the mobile phone, as you know, is multi-purpose now. In the past, a phone was just used for you to be able to speak to someone who is not with you physically in the same place. But over the years, it's also then changed its as a technology. It's been able to do much more than that.
Yeah, it's really expanded in its
scope and
functions.
And the proof of how widespread and attractive it is that everybody wants a mobile phone. You know, so I work in a digital payments space, and one of the truisms and surveys just bear this out. There are more people in ASEAN, in the ASEAN region, who, 700 million people, who have a mobile phone than have bank accounts, or than who have their own homes or businesses, you know. And surely this has something relevant to say to us in terms of what we use technology for, what we develop it for, as well. I just thought that it'd be nice to kind of quote some lines of poetry. I love poetry, and that speak into this particular question. Yeah. You know, so as you might know, the American poet and farmer Wendell Berry wrote a really well known poem called "How to Be a Poet." And he is actually quite a Luddite. He seems to not enjoy technology at all. In this poem, there are some lines which kind of give you an insight into what he thinks of technology. So these lines go like this: shun electric wire, communicate slowly, live a three-dimensional life, stay away from screens, stay away from anything that obscures the place it is in. There are no unsacred places. There are only sacred places and desecrated places. So here he seems to be saying very clearly that a place where you are, your context, you know, because of your moral agency and the tools that you use, you can be present all there, or you can actually be not there.
Yes, and we all know that, especially with the mobile phones. It's very,
absolutely. And this is a very old poem. So he was very prescient in saying that, you know, so maybe we could just turn that around, what he's wrote in his poem, and say, you know, maybe there's no morally neutral technology. Every technology, someone came up with it for a purpose, but then purpose or purposes, you know, and they are both, I think, good purposes and more insidious purposes that can be, that a particular piece of technology can be put into.
I mean, we certainly know about the dark and insidious ones with right now modern day porn coming through our screens and all that, and actually targeting at children. And unfortunately, many people are not aware of how real this is. So when you give a child a smartphone, you're actually opening the child to a very different way of life.
Absolutely.
See, so that's the moral dimension, because morality is really about how we choose to live our life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we live our life for, who we live it unto, the quality of our days and our moments.
Mm-hmm.
That is the, you know, morality is bigger than just doing the right thing and doing the wrong thing per se.
Yes.
It is a quality of life, which is what Jesus is after when he spoke on the Sermon on the Mount, right?
Yes.
It's a quality of life.
Yes. And that's a really good point, Jenny. And, you know, just taking off on that as well. Mm. I mean, technology is formative upon us from the time when you're very, very young. I've seen babies who are 1 year old or less who intuitively learn how to swipe a mobile phone or a screen.
Yeah.
And no one coached them. They never watched a tutorial. But somehow or other, as they were playing with it, it just sort of came very naturally to them. And I think as adults, of course, we all use technology. There's no getting around it, you know. But what is really sad is if there are parents who fail to bring a kind of a critical approach to letting their children use technology. And then by the time they are adults, they have really been malformed. Through the poor use or the unthinking use of technology.
I think you're right, because there's been studies that have shown, and I think the technology we have right now, which involves a lot of our bodily sensations. When you're talking about swiping, it's a tactile thing.
Yes.
And whatever is on our nerve endings shoots messages to our brains. And so the studies show that when you've been using screens a long time and the instant gratification from the screens now, it just shapes even our brains, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's something to just be really aware of and to be careful about. Not that I think we need to necessarily ascribe evil to technology, but I think we are saying it's more nuanced than that. Firstly, it's not simply neutral, because there is the person who program and design it, what they want to do with it, and the way when we use it, how it's impacting us and shaping our life, which leads to perhaps certain moral expressions or lack of a superficiality in our morality without knowing it, with, in the quality of our life.
So true.
So, okay, nowadays, you know, I mean, like in Singapore especially and all the modern cities, we are like headlong into technology. So I want to come back down to some really sort of current concerns we have about tech, which I think just the average person would have, like, okay, is tech going to replace our jobs? So we have concerns about the losses as a result of technology, which is an interesting conversation to have, because we always think of tech as gains. We're gaining time, we're gaining convenience, we're gaining power, we're gaining, you know, ability to do more things and enjoy more things, et cetera, et cetera. But now it's beginning to appear to us that, hey, tech may overtake us somewhat. There's so many things that computers can do. We may lose our jobs. We may lose our creativity, because computers can churn out novels right now. They can fight legal cases. And maybe eventually we'll lose our control, which is a very ironic situation, because the whole idea of using technology is so that humans have control over their environment. Would you like to speak into that?
Yeah, huge topic, of course.
Yes.
And being in the business and technology kind of scene, I actually can just observe that every month or so, there's a major conference somewhere, and very often in Singapore, about the future of work.
Yeah.
And so that whole topic often
comes up, mate.
Comes up, and people unpack it in different ways. One having to do with the idea of leadership. What kind of leader is will thrive and make companies thrive and make people thrive in our today's technologically enabled economy?
Yep.
What kind of employee, you know, what kind of skills does an employee need to have in order to also thrive or to keep your job, even just tread water and not get
become redundant,
or fired? So a lot of the talk and the discussion goes around those topics, and then there's very little topic, very little discussion around the idea of what kind of work makes human society flourish
and makes a person, and that's very interesting. Because I just want to push back on that point, because when you say what kind of leaders, what kind of workers, you are putting technology squarely in the center, and you're saying we have no choice but we have to relate to this thing, and literally we have ceded power to this thing, and say, you know, no choice. We will have to change our lives.
Yes.
How about flipping it around and saying, no, actually, this thing was existed to serve us.
Yes.
So why don't we ask a different set of questions?
Yes.
At this point in human history, what do we do need to do better, do differently in order for humanity to flourish?
Yes.
And how can technology serve us?
Yes.
Have you heard some contributions to this discussion?
I have, and I've done a bit of thinking around this whole topic. But especially in Singapore, it's really such a... we are a small country with a very insufficient labor force, skilled labor force.
Yeah.
So we're very open in our economy. Everybody who has something to contribute to the economy for mutual benefit is welcome in Singapore to come and work and to play and to live. And it's very, very exciting. And it's been an emphasis of the government, you know, being very far-sighted about this, that we need to use technology well because we don't have enough skilled people. Even in the armed forces, for many years, we've heard our army being referred to as a 3G army and then a 4G army. And there's now talk of being a 5G army because we're going to let
When we say 4G government, we don't mean that though.
No, we don't mean
just
that.
Just teasing.
Okay. We don't mean that. So the whole idea
government by remote.
Yeah, the whole idea that, you know, especially in the in military warfare and defense, the idea that we don't what we lack in terms of people, we can make up for in terms of technology that we use. So we spend a lot of money on things like that. And likewise, in the technology field now, there's a lot of investment by the government to really have technology not just disrupt our way of life and a way of doing things as usual, but also to make Singapore into a smart nation. We are, we've openly declared our ambition to be the world's first smart nation. So we want technology to enable that smartness in governance, in people, in the economy.
I can't help it, but I always find it very funny to describe this whole process of becoming smart when we... maybe I'm a little bit of a skeptic about technology. I mean, people who know me will know that. Yeah. So because I just think that technology doesn't make us smarter.
No. Well, you know what they're saying, right? Artificial intelligence is no match for natural stupidity. So that's where human feelings...
We can out-stupid a robot anytime. Yes.
Yes. But, you know, and on a... Well said, you know, we can, a human being can out-stupid a robot anytime. And while we are on this topic, I mean, I used to think that a good position to take on the future of work would be to let robots do what they do best and let people do what they do best.
Exactly.
So,
but that means we have to distinguish between the two.
We have to distinguish between the two. So menial work, back-breaking work, you know, lifting heavy boxes and sorting. And
or repetitive work.
Repetitive work that kind of like damages the human body and leads us to kind of like mind-numbing, soul-sapping work conditions.
And there is a lot of this kind of work going on.
There's a lot of this kind of work.
There is a lot of this kind of
work. Robots ought to do it. They do it better than us anyway. Yeah.
They should be doing the microchips.
Absolutely.
They should be doing the basic garment stitching.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They should be doing all that. Agreed.
And then, you know, people just need to do something that engages their whole self with creativity, with fulfilling labor and work. And it doesn't mean that it's not going to be hard work. But it's going to be something that is more satisfying and less damaging to our health, for example. You know, so not just the quality of work ought to go up when we engage technology, but the quantity of work that we do ought to go down. Because society today just is just in dire need of rest.
Yes, about 4-day work week.
I know that's a big topic for
that
you,
fake
right?
fake news about Finland and 4-day work week.
Exactly right. Yeah, that was fake news, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
You know, and the whole idea that we are living life at the speed of light right now. Because
but you know, this one takes a lot of work because right now, I mean, just in an average society, you're talking about a very small number right at the top, the creme de la creme, that is supposed to be doing creative value-added work. A lot of the work we delegate to big chunks of our population is just, or maybe that's a very short-sighted way of seeing it. I don't know. I think that what I think we need to do is we really need to hold up the value of human dignity.
Yes.
And that whatever work you do, you can actually bring creative value to it. Whether you are flipping burgers or all work is valuable work, and it can be done creatively and in an enjoyable fashion, right?
So that kind of reminds me of that saying, you know, do you work to live or do you live to work? And often the debate takes place around either of the two extremes.
But there's a third
way. Surely there must be something in the middle where you earn a living, you contribute to society, and you ought to be paid for it with what your own ingenuity and your industry can contribute. But that you don't eke out a minimum level of livelihood that makes it so painful and difficult. So a lot of the talk that I've heard in the last couple of years around the future of work also involve this whole question of the universal basic income. And whether a society like Singapore, is it possible to just pay everybody a small salary, whether you have work or not, you know, every single month, and then
it's a sticky subject.
It is a very sticky subject.
I know,
but
not ready
it needs to be part of the.
In the conversation. And do you think the church should get into this conversation too?
Most absolutely. I mean,
why are we like sitting on the sidelines and letting people decide stuff that has been revealed to us that God's heart is that we create in His image and all that?
Yes.
We should get involved in this conversation, right?
God's heart for
about
us is that we
work,
through our work and our heart posture, ought to be able to help society as a whole flourish.
Yeah.
And that is one of that's a great calling. It is a creation. Yeah. It is a mandate of stewardship that God has given to each and every single one of us. The church needs to teach this. The church needs to lead the way by example.
Yeah.
And be truly engaged in all the areas of
This is such a good point you mentioned about the church leading by example. Just thinking about how work is done in church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do we value it? How do we remunerate it? How do we rest our people?
Yeah.
That says a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. That is a very good subject. We will take it up at a different episode. Mm-hmm. But okay, back to technology then. How do we navigate so that we don't flop either towards technological optimism, it's all good, let's just do this, or, you know, with the younger set, there's a bit of dystopian pessimism. It's like, let's all go underground.
Yeah.
And I struggle with that a bit.
I think the starting point for me in that topic is really to recognize, first of all, that God has given us innate creativity.
Yep.
He's given us moral agency.
Mm-hmm.
And He's given us a mandate to work heartily unto Him, you know, so that all of human society and ourselves will flourish.
Yeah.
You know, especially those who, for one reason or the other, are disadvantaged by systemic issues, you know, corruption or being born in a very poor country and so on.
Yeah.
So that's an ongoing work that we've been given to be stewards of the economy, stewards of culture, stewards of society. Then the other thing I think is equally important is for us to recognize that human beings are not inherently good. You know, we have this propensity due to our fallen nature and the sin in all of our hearts that we love to be content with fake stuff. You know, we tend to idolize and be complacent,
right?
And we tend to also want to pander to
Our flesh.
Yes, and that is something that means that technology, which is the product of our ingenuity, engineering, and so on, that we design and we make that can help human beings and society, can also. The same technology often can entrap people into consumerism and addictions. And that is something that as Christians we need to recognize straight off the bat. And it also then behooves us to be very critical about everything from from design to deployment to procurement and to use of the technology. Yeah. Some well-meaning and people that I admire greatly, you know, Christian men and women have made a decision to unplug as much as possible from social media. So social media is one aspect of technology.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
So they are still, they use emails, they still watch TV. You know? But social media, they say, you know, has some very insidious and adverse effects.
Yes,
on,
it does. It does.
The
yes, there's been some good books written about that.
Yes, so there's a rise of mental illness.
It really encourages you to develop a persona.
It whittles away at your empathy, for example. You know, and you don't know how to relate to people in a way that gives life to each other. But that you're, and it also the rise of mental illness among people who use. So specifically depression, anxiety from comparing your life with other people's and or feeling that the weight of the world's burden sort of falls squarely on your shoulders.
Yes, yes, yeah. So, there's some days I'm just thinking, you know, I mean, in the old days I might know one piece of news and then I'm sitting with that news and it's really bad enough. But today, you know, if I go on Facebook or I'm subscribed to several news channels, straight away I know everything that's happening all around the world. It's really too much. I mean, as someone who likes to pray for the world, I can't finish praying. It's just too much, you know. It's just praying overwhelming. And I'm, I'm having this conversation with God. I'm going like, Lord, how many of these things am I actually responsible for?
Yes.
How many of these things do I need to respond to?
Yes.
And,
yes.
you know, and I think that is the question. So it does boil down then to each one of us being maybe self-aware about where our weaknesses are, where we might be enticed and entrapped.
Yeah. And it's very possible. I have friends that I just admire for the way they use technology, you know, and the way they steward technology on behalf of their families and their children and the way they use it to spread messages of hope, you know, and wisdom, and the way they avoid virtue signaling or virtue mongering or getting into petty discussions and catfights on social media. All of those things are very easy on social media because for some reason when you can be hiding behind a screen, you can say things to people that you would not say to them if you were sitting in the same room.
Exactly.
You know, that's just simply amazing. And we sometimes forget that. So technology, as I have mentioned before, has the potential to unravel us body and soul and spirit. We ought to be watchful about it. We ought to be watchful about that on the people that we love and then to model responsible ways of using technology so that... And there are people who are doing that. I'm just so grateful for the ministry of someone like Carol Loy, for example, and SG Village, who is into media literacy and she speaks with families, with kids at churches
And in schools sometimes
at schools and tech companies, even Facebook and Google about so people just engage technology more mindfully.
It does boil down to this whole issue of stewardship. So I think when it comes to leadership, whether it's parental leadership or church leadership, that we be very aware that this is something that we have to steward both for ourselves and for the generations to come. And therefore, in order to steward something well, you need to know the qualities of this thing, both the potentials and the pitfalls. So that's what we're talking about.
It can be very overwhelming, I must add, you know, for technology. We just use technology so unthinkingly now. Everybody has a phone. Everybody has access to all the billions of websites.
And we don't know how it works. I still don't know how the transistor radio works.
You know, and apps and stuff like that, right? You know, it can be very overwhelming. So we need to get a head start on this, get out in front of it as a church and not sort of be playing catch up all the time. And that's one of my passions, really, just to kind of help the church, help Christians sort of be critical and mindful about technology, its impact on our lives and what we can do. Technology can make our gospel witness and both better or worse. You know, so it's not just a matter about like what it does to us, but that what is our witness to the world. You know, there are tools that we can use in today's connected world to bring the gospel to the far-flung places. You know, and it's my privilege to be working with organizations like or movements like Indigitus, as well as SIL, who are involved in stewarding culture, preserving languages, so that people can hear the gospel in their own heart language. You know, even those cultures that are dying because of the encroachment of urban life and modernity.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, we had a conversation about that right here on the podcast about missions, digital. We call it digital missions. Yeah. So you guys are listening in, you can look out for that episode. But Aaron, let's come back and talk about you and your current work right now. I mean, you know, I think your work has given rise to quite a lot of the thoughts you are having right now.
Yes.
Because you have to attend so many of those seminars and conferences.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So tell us more about what you are currently doing.
For the last 2.5 years, I've been working with a Singapore fintech company.
Mm.
It's a digital payments company that has smart compliance embedded in it.
Okay.
So there are machine learning capabilities to this system that help banks and law enforcement people and customers sort of steer clear from illegal activity when it comes to moving money around.
Right.
The bulk of money that moves across borders today is done by people for legitimate business purposes or personal businesses. But there's a lot of proceeds of crime.
Human
trafficking, drug trafficking, arms smuggling, money laundering, in short, that goes around across borders.
And tech has made that so much easier, right?
Yes, tech has made it so much easier.
It used to be you have to have an account in Switzerland.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So, you know, and banks for a long time are the custodians of people's money, but they are also the gatekeepers when they see that there's some crime or suspicious activity going on around a bank account. It's their obligation by law to report this for further investigation. So I worked for many years, for more than a dozen years in banks, being their compliance and governance officer. In this fintech,
yes.
I do the same, and I also give input into the technology so that it will do what we promise that it will do. It will enable people to send money across borders cheaply, quickly, and safely, and sort of keep dirty money out of the global economy. So this is it's a very exciting time for me. Technology is not my background. Law is. Mm-hmm.
When you're stressed, you read poetry.
Yeah, exactly.
Or write them.
Exactly. Yeah. So I've had the good fortune to actually work with this Singapore entrepreneur who, this is very much on his heart to kind of design a service that will break down barriers, and it will allow people to democratize and socialize money. That's the mission of the company.
Wow.
You know,
Okay, tell us more what that means.
Yeah.
How do you democratize? I mean, so if I have no money, I have no money. How do you democratize it?
So with technology, you know, things like blockchain, which allows, which are essentially just decentralized servers and very, very safe from hacking. It's possible to digitize money and then to move it. To pay for goods and so on. So think about stuff like PayLah, PayNow, and stuff like that. And that's the first step, digitizing money.
Okay.
Then the next step, of course, is to be able to democratize it. That means the people, one of the things that the company founder tells me is that when we unleash money to do what it can do, it often has positive effects. It uplifts poor communities. It puts more pocket, more money in the pocket of the workman at the end of the month. And he can share it, and he can work harder, and it's not taxed so much, or he's not paying horrendous fees, especially for people in low-wage jobs, migrant workers. A large proportion of money that goes around the world today is migrant workers sending money home to their families.
Yes.
They work so hard, and they may earn $400 a month, $600 a month. And currently, if they were to send money home using the traditional methods, banks and remittance providers, they often pay, I don't know, 10%, 12%, 14% of the sum in
That's
fees.
That's huge, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
large, yeah. Yeah. But technology can do better.
I see.
And so that's what we're working on all the time. So democratizing money really just means letting more people share in the wealth that comes from wealth creation that comes from work and fruitful work. And then there's this whole idea of socializing money as well. So you may have heard that Facebook, for example, hatched a plan to create their own digital currency called Libra. And they're basically then going to be, once they roll it out, they're going to be every person who's on Facebook. And that is a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, you will be able to pay for things and to transact and to send money to another Facebook user using Facebook. Currently, it's not permitted by regulations.
Yeah. I think that one will have quite a lot of hurdles.
So they are working, they're trying to crack that problem.
Facebook
as
has
well.
Some issues, right?
Yeah. So I think they are on a move to socialize money. You know, so that anywhere you are on social media and you are socially connected as a community, you could move money.
Okay, I understand. Yeah. But I guess there's always still that dark side. I mean, even with Libra, all you need is just a good bunch of scammers.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. Voila, there goes all the socializing and democratizing.
So those are legitimate
concerns.
Yes. You know.
I mean, that's just criminal and that's just another dimension altogether.
Yeah. I mean, we've all received scam messages on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, hi, you know, I'm your friend. Please friend me, whatever. And then turn out that it was someone impersonating your friend on Facebook.
Yes.
Send me money, blah, blah.
Yeah. Okay, before we go, just some closing thoughts on this whole notion that maybe technology can be incarnational. I mean, the word incarnational is about living in something and embodying it and bringing the hope of the gospel.
Yeah.
So can technology do that?
Yeah. I would say that I know that it's not the first time that this phrase has been used. Mm-hmm. You know, it's better for me, I would suppose, to speak about a person incarnating the gospel in their life. So the human being as artifact, as a beloved child of God, given inherent gifts and given a mandate, and we have the duty and the privilege to proclaim the gospel, the goodness of God, not just by words, but also in what we do. You know, in the way we live our life.
Yeah, and by our presence.
And by our very presence. Mm-hmm. And I think that is important. Christians sometimes a little bit too fixated on knowing the right words to say, to share the gospel, when really you could love somebody into the kingdom. You know, you could sacrificially and in a very Christ-like way just model Christ. You know, what you can't do, I suppose, is to argue someone into the kingdom, you know, or have conflict, you know. And I've never heard so far of a case where you have a big argument and you call each other names and at the end of it, someone says, yeah, you know, you're right. What a wonderful thing it is to be a Christian and so on. Technology is really just, in that sense, a means to an end. It is both a tool as well as context. And that I accept because of its phenomenal power to shape our convictions, our worldview, our habits. The shape of our lives can be shaped by technology, and it's often done in an unthinking way. But the one that has to be incarnational, I believe, is the Christian, the human being,
the person. You're right. I guess if God wanted to reach us using technology, then Jesus wouldn't have been necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus came as a human person.
Absolutely.
Inhabiting time and space so that he can show us how to live and also live and die for us and conquer death so that we can have a model as well as an enabler to live that sort of life. So that's so important.
Well, friends,
this has been a huge topic. I'm really grateful for Aaron being here, trying to wrestle with this subject with me. Thank you so much, Aaron.
My absolute pleasure.
You know, you are listening to this. This is also a piece of technology, but I hope that with this episode, you will think a little bit more about stewarding your life, being more aware of what tech does to you and what you can do with it. And remember that in the end of the day, if you're following Christ, you want to follow an incarnate Christ and not echo what the world is offering you, no matter how convenient, how fast, how entertaining, how pleasurable it is. And before I go, this thing for you to just echo in your head. I like this quote from Richard Feynman, who says that algorithms are prejudice in code. Go think about it. God bless.
God bless.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.